Let me know when you're ready. All right, good morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, February 7th, 2017, and ask if everyone would please join the Board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you. Good morning. As always, first item of business for us is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items that are not on today's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to do so? Seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll move on to ISU Research Park update and presentation of an award from the Ames Chamber of Commerce, Mike Cox, and Conservation Board, or members of the Conservation Board.
Good morning, everybody.
Well, this is pretty informal, but I am going to hand out so you guys all have the...
So last week, while he's handing this out, last week we had our first public open house of the preliminary designs of the research park. It was really, really well attended. It was over in the hub building of the research park. And I want to say, I think Ted kept count. We had over 100 people in the first one of the open houses and probably in the 70 range for the second open house. A great presentation, lots and lots of really good questions. Hopefully you got lots of good feedback. So update us on where we are, what we learned from that.
So, yeah, it was a tremendous feedback, tremendous turnout at those meetings. And I'm glad we had it where we did because it was big enough to handle the number of people. But we have, and what I handed you is the draft master plan. This is what was presented that night. So it's a plan that has been vetted through the review committee with the engineers and now also getting that public feedback on it. The plan identifies the trail system in the park, the different program areas, if you will, in the park, habitat zones in the park, habitat restoration areas in the park, and then the trail system and connections into Ames and then connections south to R-38. That's kind of illustrated here. Illustrates different levels of trails. Some of those will be hard surfaced and some of those soft surfaced. Some more intimate and some more readily used by bicycles, strollers, etc. So it's a good plan. I'm happy with that. I think all the feedback has been great thus far. And we expect that the Conservation Board will consider this plan next Monday at their meeting. So, and then we could bring that plan to this body next Tuesday. So that's it. I guess unless any of the board members have anything to add on the update on where we are with the plan.
Well, so it just strikes me, Mike, as we've been going through the process, and it really struck me at the two open houses, that it feels like this project has been or attempted to be categorized by different interest groups into what it is. And for me, it's so much more than water quality. It's so much more than a public area. It's more than an educational area. It's more than restoration of prairie and woodlands. But it has all those components in it, and then when you combine that with the reality that we're talking about a major commercial development going on all the way around this thing, I just think this is really, really unique in what we're trying to get done here. And I want to commend you and the Conservation Board on the work you've put in. There was nothing. Have we been working on this for 2.5, 3 years now? Is that right?
I'd say three, probably.
Three years. There's been nothing easy about this. I recall the first conversation that you and I and Jim and Ted had, and we talked about it. If this were easy, it would have been done already. And there were so many places that this project could have ceased. I mean, there were lots and lots of opportunities for us not to dig in. I say us, I'm inflating my importance in this. There were lots and lots of places that this project could have fallen down, and it didn't. And it's a credit to you guys. It's a credit to others as well. I mean, the ISU Research Park staff, City of Ames had to think outside the box. Iowa State University had to really get involved. But for everybody to come together and try to find a way to put something like this together, unlike anything we've seen before, I just think it's a huge credit, and I commend you guys for really shepherding that process.
Rick, I think one that hit me.
Step closer, Ted, so that we got to record you for all posterity.
One of the hidden niceties is this is one of the first times there are six governmental agencies working together to make this to come to fruition. And so it's going to be an advantage to everybody when it's completed.
Well, we're already seeing the benefit. Ted, you're 100% right. We're already seeing the benefits in Story County that all of a sudden some doors that weren't open or were only open to crack for us in working with some of these other entities, now are wider open. Now we've made the contacts we need to make to at least have some discussions on other topics that are beneficial to the people of Story County. And it really stems from our work together and solving problems on this project.
I do have a couple of questions. I apologize for not being able to be there, but I was a bit contagious, as you might have heard. I had the norovirus, so I was out laughing. So one of them was related to the article in the paper, and it was reported that you said it would be about $4 million, and I think the numbers that Rick brought to us on the estimate were closer to $5 million on a project. So did people leave these presentations with a true understanding of the cost?
Well, I don't think we at the moment have a real good understanding of the cost, frankly. Because we are at such a master planning level. And we continue to look for ways that we can leverage county assistance into other financial or county funding into other funding. So I don't know that we have a great feel for that. That number is high right now as we go into design, and that number will come down as we go through design. I think it's going to be somewhere around that $4 million range. It might be a little more than that. I think that was portrayed. Okay. Yeah.
And what types of input did you get from the public of specific type about, you know, they want this here, they want that there, as you pointed out before, public input always increases what people want, rarely decreases it.
Exactly. The public input was interesting. We had two sessions. The afternoon session, I'd say majority of the comment there was about water quality. It was about watershed integration and stream restoration, etc. The evening meeting, the comments were more generated around the trails and the trail surfacing and the multi-use aspects of the trails. So I think that probably characterizes the two different types of inputs that we heard. We heard that trail users will be a multitude of different types, anywhere from mothers and strollers to concern over high speed bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
And so trying to manage all of that will be a bit of a challenge. Something that we can tackle through design and through signage and enforcement and et cetera. So, but those were, I think, was there anything else that came out? Yeah, those were the major inputs we received. Yeah.
And as far as funding and costs, because the two are related, right? It's hard to build something for more than you can find funding for. I think there is real recognition. I'm going to look for affirmation. There's real an understanding with the Conservation Board and you, Mike, that there's a limited number of dollars that are going to be able to flow through the county. And so anywhere that this project goes over that, I know we've already identified some funding from DOT and there's some potential for other funding sources, but there's a cap on what the county can put into this, and I think there's real awareness for that.
Absolutely. One thing I'll mention that the Conservation Board did at their last meeting in regard to this park, I think that many of you know that since we started discussion of this park, we've always referred to it as the Iowa State University Research Park, or some variation on that. And at the last meeting, the Conservation Board dedicated a formal name to the park. And I don't know that we've had that opportunity for this board to share in that. But that formal name is after someone that Rick, as you already alluded to, has been involved with this project since its infancy when you brought it to the board, and has really been a guiding force in how we look at the park and how we design it and what it is that you're seeing in front of you. And so the park is named the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor after a pretty important guy that's helped us through the process. So.
Well, I'll just say, I'll jump in before we get tears flowing here. Ted's contribution to the environment, to public space, to quality of life for Ames and Story County over many, many years, way beyond just the work on this park, I think is completely deserving of some kind of recognition. I just want to commend the Conservation Board. You know, most of the time something comes to you guys and it already has a name attached to it, and the Conservation Board doesn't really ever have an opportunity to recognize some deserving party. I think this is appropriate in so many ways. The fact that this is going to be a county park within the city limit of Ames, and Ted was a longtime mayor of Ames and, in fact, instrumental in Ada Hayden, which so many of us view as so important to quality of life. I just really commend you guys for thinking outside the box and taking this on. And, Ted, it's well-earned and well-deserved honor, and I'm thrilled that we get to refer to it as the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor, although it's hard for me to say.
Tedesco Park. How's that?
Good.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Thanks for
that. All right.
Well, so I think as you are aware, that last week at the Ames Chamber of Commerce, they had an awards presentation and gave Story County. So if you guys would like to come forward.
Yeah, we're going to take some pictures. Tell everybody what it is.
This is the Ames Economic Development Commission awarded Story County an Economic Impact Award for this year. And this award is really given to Story County for the progressive ideology with bringing using county funds and encouraging economic development throughout the county. So it has its ties into this park project that we're chatting about.
Hopefully you guys hold that.
All right, where am I squeezing in?
We'll get there.
All right. This is well done, Jim. Mike, thanks. Congratulations. Have you called that 14 months ago?
I did. Having a conversation with somebody, and I said, "You watch, they're going to need a good intent."
You're right.
I wish I'd put some money on
good
it.
Good intent. Mike, thank you. Thank you, Conservation Board. Next item is, hey, fitting, the annual report from Story County Soil and Water Conservation District. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Rick. How you doing?
Good.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm joined today with my colleagues in crime, Dana Holland, Mark Tillman, and Cindy. They're here to keep me honest. I don't have any formal presentation. You've all, I presumably, received our written report. The general comment I would make is that acres are up over 2,000.
Well, that cuts both ways.
Anyway, I'm here to answer any questions you might have. Pretty straightforward, I think.
Is there any effort on your organization to keep track, as you see last fall, the flourish of the cover crops that you're seeing farmers move to, as far as acres? You know, you probably speak to the CRP ground and whatnot when you see with the corn prices, but is there any tracking methodology you're using to, when you start to see somebody plant rye or winter wheat or whatnot?
NRCS to provide us with information we can. Could you comment on that, Dan?
Yeah, we can track it.
Come on, so we'll hear you, Dan. Thank you.
Good morning.
Morning. We can track our cover crop use through our cost share programs, the state and federal programs we have. There's a lot of people that are doing it without assistance from us, so that's a little more difficult to track.
But not a bad thing.
Not a bad thing. No, like Steve said, it's gone up here the last few years, every year. I think farmers are seeing the benefits, short-term and long-term. So,
if we were looking for quantification on that, you know, just move past the anecdotal suspicion, where would we turn?
That would have to be through our office, I think, more than anybody.
Is there any approach that is in the offing as this moves from just the novelty to the reality?
Yeah, I think it would have to be tracking when farmers come in and do certification of their crops through our office. We have to ask another question. Did you plant cover crops? Mm-hmm. That would be the easiest way to get acre figures, accurate figures. Okay. Right now we've got about roughly 5,000 acres that we cost share.
In Story County?
Story County.
That's a good number.
That's a good number. You know, we've got probably close to 250,000 acres of row crops. So
it's a start.
It's a start, but we hope it increases. But
so this 5,000 represents what your organization is helping provide?
Right. It's a cost incentive that we provide, yeah.
But probably more acres than that, but you just don't know how many.
Right. There could be closer to 10,000.
Now we're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
Journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. We just need to make sure it's growing.
Yeah.
So a couple things that I think we need to point out. So this board of supervisors in next year's budget has doubled our support for Soil and Water Conservation District. And so we're really appreciative of the work you guys are doing and are hoping for so much more. It's actually really fortuitous that Joe Quaker's here today, because one of the things we talked about in our meeting with Soil and Water Conservation is making sure that we have more opportunities to allow our farmers to do things like cover crops. And Joe, you'll be happy to know that we volunteered you to assist in all those programs. Absolutely. So you guys, if you don't know Joe, everybody knows Joe. If you don't know Joe, make sure that you know him. And Joe, we need to make sure that our capacity is such that Soil and Water Conservation can run whatever programs they want to run, hopefully utilizing existing equipment that we have or new equipment that we would maintain. But those were two really exciting steps that I thought we made. And then the final thing I'll mention, Steve, and then I'll just ask you to kind of wrap it all together for us, is Story County actually has out to bid right now a request for proposal to assess all of the watersheds in Story County. It'll be at the HUC 12 level, but I believe, and I strongly believe, that that'll make Story County the first county in the state of Iowa to have done an assessment on all of our watersheds, and the exciting opportunities that that can lead to in trying to deal with this watershed that is the upper South Skunk River really gives me encouragement on where we're headed. I just want to encourage you guys. The role that soil and water conservation is going to play in where we go once we have these foundational elements in place is going to be enormous for the success of any programs we might put in place. So we need to make sure that we're further enhancing the bonds between the Board of Supervisors and soil and water conservation, and really appreciative of the work you guys do.
Well, thanks, Rick, and we genuinely appreciate your support. This can sometimes be a thankless venture, but we feel we've had some really good successes the past couple of years. One thing we do is annually have a retreat of the entire commission on a Saturday, spend several hours talking strategic things. It's not a traditional strategic planning session, but it's sort of like it. And we were able to really get down to the values that are important to us as individuals and as a commission. One of the things we have as a highlight for the commission to achieve is to work with other organizations, other groups, including the supervisors, the County Conservation, and others, individuals, to create what we call a culture of conservation in the county. And we are frustrated, like many, with the lack of leadership at higher levels in the system, and we really feel fortunate we have the leadership we have in this county. And that's about all I can say. Thanks for your help.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, and keep us informed as we move ahead. I think there's a demonstrated commitment among the three of us to trying to address as much of this as we can here locally, demonstrated commitment to trying to really dig in and lay those foundational pieces. In fact, Leanne, an invitation went out today to the different entities impacted by the Kegley branch of the South Skunk River. Soil and water will be one of those, but we're looking at forming a watershed authority for that Kegley branch that will kind of mirror what we're doing in the Squaw Creek watershed. And so really, really exciting to look at some of the pieces that are being put in place and all of you, the work that you guys have done for many, many years, now starting to see some of it come to fruition is really exciting.
It's really good. And I also want to repeat what I said 2 weeks ago in this room. The commission annually does a tour of the county to look at various, highlight conservation progress and sometimes the lack of it.
Yep.
We go out in the van, and I'd like to invite the commissioners, anyone who wants to join us this year, as long as you've got mud boots, come with us. And we interact with farmers, and it's a good way to get our feet on the ground, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's about it.
And we have the 15-passenger van for you guys to use if you don't have one. So,
fantastic.
We'll take you up in an hour.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Marty? Anything? Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Agency reports. We've got the Ames Community Preschool annual report. Sue. Ted, have a great day.
Yep.
Thank you all.
Absolutely. Hey, Mike. Sue, how are you?
I'm just fine, thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning to all of you. I think my role today is to show you the breadth of services that you as supervisors have in Story County, to go from soil and water to now we're going to talk about child care centers, and it's like, wow, you're doing it all.
It's what keeps this job so fun.
Yeah, and what makes my job fun, yes. And I thought I did submit something to you all, but I realized with two new people, maybe I'd take just a minute to talk about ACPC in general and just to get your bearings. For 45 years, ACPC was in the First Christian Church, the whole upper floor in the basement of the First Christian Church, which is that church across from the City Hall in Ames, and very carefully trying to save money so that we could go and buy something. Well, it took us 45 years, and the school district finally was selling, so now our main center is in the former Wilson Beardtree building at 920 Carroll Avenue. So in addition to 115 children there, we also do before and after school in all the public schools in Ames and St. Cecilia as well. And so we've got something like 430 kids last year that we provided child care for. And so that's a little quick history. Then what I was going to do today was talk a little bit about the asset funder priorities and the status of our new building. And I'm going to pick out some things from what I submitted for you. We get $141,000 in asset money, which seems like a huge amount. We use all of it to subsidize our sliding fee scale. And those people on the sliding fee scale are receiving anywhere from as little as 25 off to as much as 340 off a month. So you can go through a lot of money very quickly at $300 per month discount. Our families, we had to do something for the food program, and I just wanted to share with you the typical families that we have at the main center, and we had to do an ethnicity type thing for the food program. Caucasian families, 64%. Black families or African American families, 7%, and Asian families, which would be including Indian and Asian people, 29%. So 64% is, you know, we've got a nice mix of families. We also have a nice mix of cultures and everything in Ames. One of the things that makes us a little different from a child care center in Ames is we're more community representative. We're open to everybody in the community. Some child care centers have to focus just on the students, and we've got everybody, and without any restrictions on anything other than the age of the child. And usually we have 20% of our families on the sliding fee scale. And that is restricted really to the amount of asset money we have. We don't want to give away more than what we've got, even though we certainly could. We have a huge waiting list, always have a huge waiting list. Many of the people on the waiting list want in because of our rates. There was a family that toured last week, and if they come to us from where they are now, they're almost saving half of their.
And that's without being on the sliding fee.
Half without being on the sliding fee.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's, you know what? No, Rick.
Oh,
it's half with being on the sliding fee scale. They're paying $1,200 a month now. It will be $550 with us.
And what's your normal rate?
For that age, $900, $980.
So they'd still be saving $300 a month.
Exactly. Yep. Even if they weren't on the fee scale, yes, they are. They would be saving that much.
Could I ask a question about the fee scale?
Sure.
You have 20% of the students receiving it right now, according to this report. Is it capped according to a percentage or capped according to how much money you have?
Capped by how much money we have.
Okay.
The percentage, we do have our student money in a little bit separate pot, our money from the student government, to make sure that goes just to students. But the rest of the money is open just based on the income. The parents submit typically their tax forms, but if their family situation changed, like a divorce or something from 1 year, then it's payroll information.
But Morris, I didn't take it, and Sue, maybe you can correct it, I didn't take the 20% number as number of students that qualify. I took it as number of families.
Right. It's 20% of the family.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks for catching.
And again, if we, and most of the families that are accessing most of the money are going to have the preschool age. We have many rates for the school age to try to keep there, so that if they only need 2 days a week, that's all they have to pay for, and so their rates are significantly lower. So. We are enjoying being in our new building. It has brought with it some concerns that we didn't know we were going to have.
Yeah. Your new and building.
Our new building. Our new old building, yes. And we are in the midst of redoing our master plan or our strategic plan for this year. When Nancy was here, Nancy Franz was one of those that helped us develop our latest strategic plan a year ago. The board is meeting next week to say, okay, what do we most need to focus on? What we most need to focus on, I address in the report, and that's $750,000 worth of repairs. And maybe that, on your budget, that probably is peanuts.
No.
On our budget, it's really big money. And so we are trying to decide how much of a loan, how much... can we spread it out over, you know, do this phase and then that phase? And so after next week, we don't have some of the precise figures that we need. I did address, we did ask that if they would like to give us more money that we could use for the building projects, but they did not do that. I think they prefer their money go to more direct services. Although I didn't get a reason for it, but I would have to guess that that's what. Because, you know, all our money up to this point, we've never asked for any money other than the sliding fee scale. So we thought maybe this would be a good chance. But asset didn't agree with us, so that we just go on with the next phase.
Related to this, and semi-asset, but the City of Ames obviously has been having discussions about the $3 million they have.
Yes.
And have you been notified in any update of those?
Yes. We, for those people who don't know, they sent out a survey to just agencies in general. Did we have any projects? Of course we had a project. And so we submitted the Survey Monkey, and then I've been to a couple meetings, and maybe February, and the word I've gotten, the informal word, is that it's probably not going to be as much money as they had originally hoped, and certainly it's not going to be our $750,000. But if they gave us anything that came out of this fund that they're talking about, it would be that much less that we would have to either try to fundraise or take a loan for. So yes, I'm aware of it. Yes. So our waiting list is still as long as it ever is, partly because people want in because of the rates being a little bit lower. One of the reasons for those new people, one of the reasons it took us 45 years to have our own building is our board was pretty conservative and wanted to make sure that we didn't buy something and then immediately have to turn around and raise our rates for the parents. We wanted to see how much of it we could do without going there. And two, they wanted to stay in a central location in Ames. Our parents are from all over the city and the county. A lot of people come in to work at Mary Greeley or the city, wherever they are, and so there's out of town people. But it was those two things that they really wanted to keep the focus on. So that's where we are with things. So do you have any questions? I know I didn't exactly run through this, but
Marty, anything?
Morning, Sue. What are your hours of operation?
I couldn't hear you.
What are your hours of operation?
7 to 6,
right.
Monday through Friday, 12 months of the year. We may be opening earlier than that. Now that we're closer to the medical world, there's medical people that would like us to open earlier. Mm-hmm. Those are informal talks that need to...
You will have them. They're probably ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
Is your program, when you say you have a waiting list, is it capacity capped by your staff or your facilities where you're at? I think there's... Don't you have a restriction on how with staffing per child?
Yes.
Is it the facility that, you know, you obviously occupy a new one? Is there... What holds you back from expanding?
Okay. There are four rooms at one end of the building and four rooms at the other end of the building, based on ages of kids. All the rooms are about the same size. Square footage by licensing can tell you that you could have 18 to 20 kids in a room.
All right.
So, having said that, for our little people, the 18-month-olds, we have 12 people in a room. Best practices says for 18-month-old children, you don't put more than 12 in a room. So it's a combination of the size of your space and what is the best to do. We can have 18 4- and 5-year-olds, and we do, but we don't have 18 of the little people.
Marty, I recommend... If you get an opportunity to go through and tour it, I've had the opportunity to get the tour and spend some time
over here in the Bay Area, and I've heard about what you do over there. What I'm doing is I'm on the Resource Center floor here.
Oh.
So I'm just kind of overlaying that knowledge against what you're doing to give me a feel for what you're up against, because we're space limited.
Uh-huh.
And the school is looking to take this facility and the expanse that they're projecting to do. Vacate it for a structure that provides for additional growth, because yes, in Nevada we have a waiting list for the people you speak to, because it's from, we serve out of town as well. It's funny, your story sounds like the story over here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have it dialed in, because my suspicion was that you were going to tell me you were space limited, and that there are things that while you move to a better facility, you still have limitations that prevent the expansion of your program.
Yes. Well, and one of the things, and it's a perfectly logical thing. There are three rooms on the west side of the building, two rooms on the west side of the building, that we don't use for children. One of the rooms we gave to Raising Readers, which is another United Way agency, and our asset agency. And we gave them that space and an office, and then we have a boardroom. Well, you look at that boardroom and think, well, that'd be great. The problem is it doesn't have an outside exit. And the fire marshal says, you won't put children in a room that doesn't have an outside exit. And if we were to do construction, the outside exit would go directly out into the drive-up. So, you know, maybe at some point, maybe we would do, but it would take some real thinking.
I would visit with my school board.
Yeah.
Put it on the planning side of things.
Thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome.
Next is consideration of minutes from January 31st.
I would move to approve. It was a long meeting, and I can't believe Shelley shortened it down to a page and a half, but there you have it.
And I will second.
Any notations? Marty just made a notation. Any corrections or additions?
I thought Shelley did a great job of narrowing that down.
Absolutely. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Standard, aye. Personnel actions as listed, board.
So moved.
Second.
Chief.
Aye.
Morris.
Aye.
Olson. Sanders. Aye. We have to get used to this. Consideration of claims, a large claims week.
Mm-hmm. I went through them line by line because, you know, that's what I do. And I move approval with no question.
Second.
Motion and a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims pass. Consent agenda as listed.
I would move that we approve the consent agenda as listed with no additions or withdrawals.
So moved.
All right. We've got a motion and a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes. That gets us to public hearing items. Third consideration of Ordinance 248, amending the Story County, Iowa Code of Ordinances and adding a new Chapter 83 to land development. Jerry.
Good morning.
Jerry.
Good morning, Jerry. The board approved the special events ordinance at the January 10th meeting with the three amendments, which were dealing with extension beyond the 3 business days, provided that the applicant and the applicable county department or outside agency approves to it. There was language added about penalties, and then the third thing was the planning and development staff will be doing public notices as we do for other development applications. So at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, February 1, the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval with the 3 amendments. And so that brings us to, as you said, the third and final consideration. There's been a lot of work that has gone into this ordinance. It will replace the existing process that we have. It will be more streamlined, less costly. It will involve the larger groups. There's exemptions. And, again, we think we have a pretty solid ordinance that we're proud of. We're also happy to have a work program item that is completed. So with that.
Good. Questions or thoughts for Jerry before we open the public hearing?
I'd just like to thank your staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission for taking such a look at this, and also thank members of the public who weighed in at various points. And it's nice to be reassured that things like graduations and funeral gatherings are exempted from it. So hopefully that word can get out.
We'll do our best to communicate.
Outstanding. All right, so we're going to open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to address Ordinance 248. Seeing no one moving the microphone, I'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for action.
I would move approving the third consideration, the Special Events Ordinance 248, with the amendments.
I think prior to approval, or my motion, I would appreciate everybody, as Laura said, that's weighed in on this. We've looked at this and walked around it. Jerry has done his usual due diligence. I have comfort in adopting this second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. I'll just underscore that this is the third and final reading, and if this passes here, it in fact becomes ordinance.
We will publish.
And so, any further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Ordinance 248 passes. Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you.
Additional items. Discussion and consideration of the request of funding for 2 buses for HERTA. Bowie and Brooke. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's see. Two years ago, we did the same thing. Is that right? That it's been 2 years now?
It's been 2 years.
Okay.
So we appreciate that you did that 2 years ago. This year, we will be asking for a little less than we did 2 years ago because we're actually getting 85% of the funding from federal funds, and 2 years ago we only got 80% of that funding. So we are asking for $27,321, which would be a 15% match for 2 additional buses here. Our biggest issue in Story County with our buses is the age of the buses. And we're spending about $20,000 a month just in maintenance in Story County on vehicles.
How many buses is that?
We have 16.
16.
And we got the 2 new buses 2 years ago that are here, and we also got a new MV1, which is like a small minivan type vehicle as well. So we're slowly getting some buses replaced, but I know that most of our buses are, you know, they're 10 or 12 years old, and that maintenance is just a lot higher for that. As I've said before, Iowa has the second oldest bus fleet in the entire United States, up against South Dakota, and we've got twice as many rural buses as they do in our state. So we're not high up on the federal list of replacing buses. So we appreciate every bit of help that we can get when those buses do come available and we get federal funds, that we can try to get the match money so that we can get those replaced. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to turn it over to Brooke, and Brooke's going to give you some more details on more of the statistics of what's happening actually in Story County.
So as Julia said, the buses are aging. One of the buses that would be replaced is actually a 2003, so we would really appreciate getting a newer vehicle for that particular. The average age of our fleet right now is about 8 years old, including the new vehicles that we had over the last 2 years. I would like to note that I started at Herta in 2010, and 2 years ago when we got the replacement match money from the Board of Supervisors, that was the first set of vehicles we had eligible for replacement in Story County. So it's nice to see that in just a couple of years, even though it only seems like a few buses, it's making a difference. We do provide, last year, about 53,000 rides in Story County. That was over 336,000 miles of services and almost 27,000 hours of service in Story County.
Wow.
So,
you see your buses all over. I did not know you went that much.
Yes. We did a little bit of analysis in looking at the vehicle replacements, and I was just telling Julia last week, I think it has to do with the geographical layout of Story County, being that Ames is so far on the west end of the county versus some of the other rural communities. And so we actually see that the vehicles accumulate mileage 54% more in Story County than looking at similar other counties in our service area where the seat of the county is more centralized.
Has there ever been any discussion about shifting the Herta base to Nevada? Moving it out of Ames? In other words, you got your buses in Ames, mm-hmm. right? You're pretty much, the rides are being dispatched from Ames. Okay, so if somebody goes to Zierin or Colo or something, they're really coming from Ames most of the time. Mm-hmm. So has there been any thought ever about moving operations to Nevada to make it easier to get all the way around the county?
You know, we haven't thought about moving our entire base to Nevada, but we have talked about moving some vehicles to Nevada so that we would have actually some vehicles in both of those areas. So, and I think some discussions are probably still going to be going on about that.
Okay, I just want to kind of remind you that I made a request out that we not have any more meetings until you and I have a chance to talk. Okay, cool. Okay. All right, great. Then my other question is, since we'll be,
I assume we'll be voting
to replace two more buses then. So you said about $20,000 a month?
On maintenance.
Mm-hmm. So can any of that money then be shifted over to help purchase even another vehicle?
There's the possibility of that. There's also the possibility of using some of that additional money to expand operations. So it's still kind of, we don't have a specific plan yet for what we would use additional funds for, or the cost savings of that. One of the things that we're trying to focus on this year is at what point is it putting too much maintenance into our vehicles versus just not using that vehicle and looking about how we can fund an additional vehicle. And in talking with some of the other transit systems in the state of Iowa, there's 35 designated transit systems in the state of Iowa. Some of them are now reaching out and purchasing used buses in places like Las Vegas or some places that don't have the weather issues that Iowa does. Because there's no other buses in Iowa to buy because we're all running our buses until they're, you know, not able to run again. So we are looking at various things like that and how to save on maintenance costs, but yet give us a vehicle that may be able to run for a couple more years. So, and federal money is just very iffy. We have come to rely on federal money to buy vehicles, and I don't know that that's what we're going to be able to continue to do, so we have to look at alternatives.
No, but we have to take advantage of it.
We have to take advantage of it while we can.
And the other thing I'll point out is the $20,000 a month that you guys are currently spending doesn't go away by purchasing these two buses. We hope that we're getting rid of two buses that we're spending some money on,
right,
but this
correct.
Is still that 16 bus.
But hopefully there we will see some cost savings in that. But again, you never know because it takes one engine or transmission to go out, and that's a bill that we don't really want to pay. So
these buses would displace two, then you would keep your fleet at the same headcount then, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, because the two buses that would be replaced, I don't believe, they're either probably not worth keeping anymore, or we would probably need to transfer one to one of our other counties that probably has an older bus.
Or doesn't have a
doesn't
backup.
Doesn't have a backup bus. We have some of our counties that don't even have a backup bus if one goes down. So it kind of depends on what the condition of the bus is by the time we are actually going to get them, which...
Every vehicle has its own story.
Yeah, and it takes several months to purchase these vehicles.
So that was my next question, is give me the timeline on this. If the board were to say yes, proceed today, what happens?
It takes us about 4 months to get, if we ordered the vehicle today, it would be about 4 months before the vehicle was delivered. And then the make-ready process itself to do the graphics and security cameras and everything that's needed for the vehicle to be in service takes about 2 additional months. Right now the DOT has been a little far behind on actually getting our titles and everything set up. So unfortunately, the last minivan that we got took a little longer than 6 months. So I would say on the safe side, 6 to 7 months to get it into service.
Yeah, so the problem for us, if we were to say yes, I'm assuming that we're trying to do the same thing we did 2 years ago, which would be using this fiscal year's dollars, savings that we have in this fiscal year. We don't have this in the budget for FY18. I believe that we have dollars available in FY17, and it just gets problematic for us if we spill over beyond that July 1st date. So can you speak to me about that? When you would be asking for funding, not even necessarily when you're getting the bus, when you'd be asking for funding from Story County?
We could have the invoice from the dealer before the end of this fiscal year if we were to go ahead and order it this week.
It doesn't mean it'd be put into service right away, but we would have to.
Yeah, for me, it's simply figuring out how to make the dollars and cents work.
Yeah, we could do that by July 30th, or by June 30th.
Yeah, and it's actually sooner than that for us to get it into our paperwork. If you feel like you can make that work. Now, the second question doesn't have anything to do directly with buses, but so we went through the process a year or so ago, and Nancy France is here today, of really working on some of the issues that we have here locally between HRDA and providing service in Story County. And one of the things that came out of that, as I recall, is the development of a strategic plan. I'm hoping you can update us today. I know you've got a generally new board. Loris is our member on your board, but I think you have multiple other new members on your board. It seems to me that now's an ideal time for HRDA to be putting together this strategic plan, specifically how it impacts Story County. Where are we?
We worked with Iowa State, what's it called,
The BizLab.
Okay, so we worked with them, and they got us started on a strategic plan and did a lot of work for us. There's some problems in the strategic plan that we need to tweak them, but we're really close to that being done and presented to the board.
Okay.
It's, I would say, a couple more months. We've been having regular meetings, internal meetings, where we're talking about where we want to be and how we're going to progress and what we want to see in Story County based on a lot of the feedback that we got. And I think you were going to talk about that as well, the task force that was put together and some of the things that came out of that so that you could hear what we had, some of those things that are off the table now that we have
corrected. Right, so we have a list of things we're going to work on, and for me, the strategic plan is a big one for how we're looking going forward. Yep. Yeah, Brooke,
We're getting close to that, and then Brooke can give you some more details.
So the original document through the task force started with 23 items. 10 of those have actually been marked as complete, and then the 9 remaining items are some of them have to be ongoing, such as collaborate with other agencies on needs, agree to have a beneficial relationship and meet quarterly. 3 of the items actually could be addressed with the assistance of the money we were asking for today. One is improving the physical condition of the buses. Of course, again, that's one of the ongoing items because today doesn't solve all of those issues. Implementing a process improvement improvement program, that was a tongue twister for some reason, monitor performance standards, additional training on passenger behaviors, provide others with FTA or federal regulations, everyone agreeing to follow the chain of command and contact the appropriate place, annual meetings to continue with partnerships. So those are all things that we've continued to do since this process started about 18 months ago, I believe. And then there were two items that were deemed not feasible, and then two where we actually have some grant applications out. And one of those is improving telephone and email systems. We just had our phone system upgraded last week. And the other one was reviewing additional options within the scheduling software, and that was another grant opportunity.
Yeah, a couple of the things that we're doing, we've applied for some grant money. We received some of it where it is our scheduling software, a portal of that scheduling software can actually be put into, like, Mary Greeley or McFarland Clinic or Mainstream Living. And they could, when somebody schedules an appointment to come back, they could go in there and actually schedule the trip right then, and then we get it, and then we can talk about it. It would eliminate the customer having to calling, remembering to call. They could schedule their appointment exactly when their appointment is for their doctor or whatever. So that's going to be something that we're going to start implementing at least three different facilities in Story County this year. And then the other one would be to give the general public the same opportunity to be able to go in. Right now they can call or they can email us, but this way they could actually log onto their computer and schedule their trip themselves. And then the third component of that is where we could get away with them having to carry cash or tickets, where they could just put funds into a portal, and then when they ride, it's just deducted right from their trip. So it would be a safeguard in a lot of ways. So we do have some grant opportunities out there, or some grant applications out there. Part of that has been funded, and the rest of it we're hoping to be funded. So that would just make us more of a, give people more flexibility in scheduling their trips. And they could also go in and cancel their trips. They could look at their trip to remind them of what it is. In Story County, one of the things that we do that we don't do in our other counties is that we actually have a call that calls them the night before to remind them of when their trip is the following day. That has seemed to help. It has cut down on our no-shows tremendously. So there are things that we're doing technology-wise to bring more flexibility and try to increase our rider base and what their needs are, and to bring more safety to the people that are actually riding the vehicle.
Perfect. So Brooke, tell me the two that aren't feasible, just for my own information.
One was providing an attendant on every vehicle, and the other one was a localized reservation system.
And, of course, much of what you've addressed today here and you said that you're working on or you implemented are very targeted populations, and that is one of my largest concerns, is that there's really not capacity to serve other people other than people who are already receiving service through an asset agency or a hospital. But that's things that I think that Julia and I could sit down at a separate meeting and discuss about going forward, about where would HRDA fit into a broader scheme of providing services, and also delays in service, et cetera. So it's exciting to hear that some of these are going forward when we're talking about serving specific populations, but I think we've still got some.
Yeah, absolutely, but it's more, for me, I think we're talking about maybe two different things here, and I know that one of your priorities all the way through has been expanding the transportation system in Story County, but the relationship that Story County currently has with HRDA through ASSET is asking them to provide a very specific services under a very specific set of circumstances, and that's how our funding flows through it. So for me, it's really two separate conversations. It's where we are today, and are we addressing some of the shortcomings that we felt like we had on our existing services? And then the conversation that I know you really want to get into is, how is Story County going to expand services, and then what would HRDA's role, if any, be in those expanded services?
Right, and talk just a little bit, because we did want to go over some of the services that we do provide, because I do think that not everybody realizes some of the stuff that we do provide, and I know when the ACTC was up here talking about that, we do services for them as well. We do a lot of field trips for the young kids, which is something that I don't think is generally known, because we're looked at very much as an elderly and disabled bus service. But we do have some some other, you know, we are taking people to jobs. We have had people that have lost their license due to poor decision making on their part. They still need to, and one of them was with the Postal Service. He still had a job. He had a good job. He still needed to get there. We have been able to be that service for him. There's some other ones I can't read through.
Oh, sorry. So we do things with the Special Olympics. Every year they have their annual Iowa Games, and we provide services just kind of on standby for anybody that comes. The Boys and Girls Club, we just started working with Legal Aid. Hopefully we'll have some new programs with them. Through the United Way, we help with the summer lunch programs in Nevada and in Ames, the Raising Readers, the Women's Initiative. We have a shuttle for DMAC to for the college kids at a reduced rate so that they can get to education. Of course, we have the Iowa City trips. Julia mentioned the ACPC. So the service types that we provide, we break them down into categories of adult day center, employment, child care, worship, grocery, hospital relief, leisure, other medical, meal site, program services, which would be like mainstream, for example, and educational. So we have a wide variety, and we are actually required federally to provide services to the general public. It's not an exclusive service.
Addressing what you were talking about, the services that we're contracting for, one of the things I'd like to do is be able to work with you to determine what the anecdotal evidence that is coming versus the empirical or the reality of scheduling or whatever, because perhaps maybe some of the information reaching at least my ears related to our population that we're already funding, as far as some of the stories of dissatisfaction with service, maybe there are explanations or there's always two sides to a story. I think that's a good place to start on the existing conversation. So, and thank you for providing the list today of where you're already servicing beyond our contract.
We continue to look for other areas of where, like the Boys and Girls Club, we just started doing that last year because, you know, they had newer staff and it was just a good fit, and yes, we want to do that. And we do work a lot with United Way and a lot of the programs that they do. So I don't want it just, I know that there's this image, and there's historically been an image that we just serve elderly and disabled, and so we've been working really hard to try to squash that, because we are out there serving the general public as much as we possibly can.
Well, sure. You've got reality, you've got perception, and our goal has to be to make sure that perception matches as closely reality as possible, and then we go to work on the reality and solve some of the things we need to solve.
Absolutely. Okay, great. And Laura and I will definitely be meeting and talking more about that.
Perfect. All right, so board, and now we're to the point of, because unless you have other questions, we're to the point of consideration. And I just want to point out what the Board of Supervisors did 2 years ago for information as we consider how to go. So 2 years ago, we agreed to fund a portion of the purchase of two buses. We agreed to do it in the fiscal year we're currently in, not the next fiscal year. And so we agreed to use general fund dollars, but some of that would have been, and in fact was, made up by asset funds that are not fully drawn down within that fiscal year. We don't go in and scoop anything, but anything that's remaining from asset that's not utilized in the general fund area, we use to backfill some of, I want to say it's like $32,000 or $33,000 that we did last time.
Yeah.
And I believe we ended up with about $10,000 remaining from asset that we used to offset some of those costs. That's what was done last time. That's what I'm suggesting to you that we do this time in funding this 27. So that's all behind-the-scenes stuff that you don't have to worry about. If it passes, the 27 would be there. That's how we would account for it.
So you're saying you got $10,000 worth of $16,000?
No. I'm saying what would happen. So this would all be out of FY17. It's an unbudgeted item. If we agreed to this today, we would be agreeing to spend $27,321 from the general fund. And then what I'm suggesting to you is that we would also then put a caveat in that said any funds that were remaining from asset at the end of the year that weren't drawn down as part of the FY17 asset process, we would put it back in this area.
as a dependable plan forward, and I think it is worthy of our support. I make a motion to approve the request of the funding for the two buses for Pertec for the dollar value of $27,321.
I second.
Okay, we have a motion, second, further discussion.
None.
Clarification for me, it's your intention that we would, in fact, utilize the asset dollars on the back end? I mean, that's more of a motion. I just want to make sure
I understand. There's a little bit of depth to it, and we can give it voice. And that would be my motion.
Okay. All right. Further discussion?
No.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very
much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is discussion and consideration of resolution 1782. Trentos voluntary.
Good morning, Emily.
Good morning.
Emily, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Really, really well, thank you.
Sorry about that. This is a annexation request put forth by the City of Ames. So resolution 1782 would be to approve the annexation request. This is a voluntary annexation. The applicant for this annexation is the Trinitas Ventures. The property owners involved are George Blitzos and John Crane, with a total of 35.69 acres. George Blitzos owns a 21.5-acre parcel on the west side of Ames, as well as a two-acre parcel that includes his dwelling. John Crane owns about 13 acres in total, which was a former mobile home. So we are on the west side of Ames, directly adjacent to the corporate limit, south of Lincoln Way and east of 500th Avenue. This is a 100% voluntary annexation, so we have no non-consenting property owners. The City of Ames corporate limits is the red line here. We are directly west of there. Just zooming in a little bit on the property, there's the existing dwelling. That will remain as is, but it will be annexed into the city. The utilities, the water, sewer, does come up to the eastern side of the proposed annexation. Here's a plat of the annexation area. There is a slight change in the request. Campus Fortress, which is this parcel here, has decided not to go forward with the annexation at this time. So this area is in one of Ames' allowable growth areas, and their land use plan, policy plan. It's in the southwest one region. It is located in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, and just as a kind of a reminder of what we've already gone through on this, we've already brought to you the request to amend the plan. We've also already done a map and text amendment. And now we're at the annexation part. The amendment to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan was to change this area from rural urban transition area to the urban services area, and then to allow areas designated highway oriented commercial to be annexed without a map amendment. So we approved this in December of 2016. This is hard to see. Sorry about that. But this area here, which is now going to be new urban services area, a new urban services area. This is a land use framework map from the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. The proposed annexation area is primarily designated urban residential to the south there, but it is designated highway-oriented commercial in the northern portion. So the proposed development, and before I go over this, I will just stress that this is really a motion about the annexation. This proposed development is just proposed at this point. So Trinitas is proposing student housing development with a mix of attached and detached housing types, public and private streets. The developer anticipates constructing about 854 bedrooms. And just note that those are bedrooms, not units. Upon annexation, the properties will be zoned as agriculture, but Trinitas will need to apply for a rezoning of the property, and that would be to the residential designation, a planned residential development. In addition to that, they are, in order to go forward with their proposed development, they would have to go through a text amendment to allow the proposed density in that district. So the whole process with the map amendment, text amendment for the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, as well as the annexation request, probably taken about 7 to 9 months. The applicant's plan is to begin construction this summer, 2017, on the development, and then with goals of occupancy in 2018. So this is, once again, a very preliminary concept drawing. I will point out the access points. They are proposing an access off Lincoln Way here, and another one off 500th Avenue here. They are proposing that this Lawrence Avenue would be a public road and would connect possibly to a future development to the south there.
How far is the annexation go on 500th? Does it just go to the center of the street?
Yes, I'm sorry. The whole right-of-way. Right-of-way. Yep. So here's some site photos. It was greener at this time when these were taken. This Mr. Blitzel's dwelling, the two-acre parcel. Panning to the west there, this is the larger 21-acre parcel. Looking west on Lincoln Way toward Boone. And here's the commercial development located on that Campus Fortress parcel. Here we are looking east toward the city of Ames on Lincoln Way. This is the Crane property off of 500th Avenue. This is the current access point. And here's looking north along 500th Avenue toward Lincoln Way. So we did send, Planning and Development did send out notices to property owners within a quarter mile of this voluntary annexation on January 31st. We did receive one email primarily with general questions about the types of units proposed, what and where the street extensions would be. And then we did receive another email yesterday regarding the impacts of the development, the possible impacts, and concerns about drainage and runoff, noise and pollution from the construction, traffic along Lincoln Way, and then the overall density of the size of the project. Once again, though, those concerns really have more to do with the proposed development rather than the annexation. All of those concerns will be dealt with by the city during the subdivision process. So the annexation timeline, the city held a consultation meeting on January 18th. State law indicates that the county has 30 days to respond to the consultation meeting and the annexation request. This item was approved by the city's Planning and Zoning Commission on February 1st. With that recommendation there, essentially to annex the 35.69 acres. This item will be before the Ames City Council on February 28th. And just as a reminder, this item does not need to go before the City Development Board because it is a 100% voluntary annexation. So just some points to consider. 100% voluntary, the Ames Urban Fringe Plan and text and map amendment were supported by the county as well as the cities of Ames and Gilbert. The properties in the proposed voluntary annexation are located in a district that's compatible with being annexed into the city, and the properties are within the city's urban growth plan. The properties are directly contiguous to the city's corporate limits, and water and sanitary sewer mains do come up to the east side of the property. So Resolution 1782 was prepared for the Board of Supervisors to support the proposed Trinitas Ventures voluntary annexation. Do you have any questions for me?
Questions?
None.
Yes. It's been slow walked up to this point.
Yeah.
There's been no opposition to it. I think it's clearly something. I was just in a conversation yesterday marveling at how we find ourselves, the west portion of Ames is becoming what appears to be nothing but student housing, and that which Ames is today is going to be what Ames was. And the fact that here we go again.
Yeah, and I would just point out that this would be the last action that the county would take on this property, and then the rest of it would reside with the city of Ames. I'm really appreciative of some of the, since I live right over there, I'm really appreciative of some of the water quality concerns, but I will just point out what the city of Ames has invested along College Creek just east of this area. I don't believe that they're going to allow anything that's going to negatively impact the huge investment they've made along the downstream stretches right here. And then as far as traffic goes, yeah, if you're going to add up to 850 bedrooms primarily by the state students, you're going to see an increase in traffic on Lincoln Way right there. That's the reality of growth. But this is the last opportunity for the county to weigh in on this.
We'd be ready for a motion.
Yep.
I would move adoption of Resolution 1782 of the Trinity House Voluntary Annexation.
I would second.
Motion second. Further discussion?
I'd just like to comment. Always it's a struggle when discussions have come up lately about adding more student housing in Ames. This one, I think, is fortunately, it's the lot owners, the property owners are happy to do it. We've not heard from neighbors. There's not been as many concerns. As you pointed out, there's more interest in making sure, maintaining water quality. And there is a benefit when you add under these circumstances, and that is we free up then maybe on the other end of the spectrum some more apartments for affordable housing, for, you know, to that it takes a little bit of pressure off of the rental market, and Ames opens up some viability. I just wanted to comment on it.
Yeah, and the other concern that we get to hear regularly when it comes to annexation is, oh my goodness, every time something is annexed, the county is losing revenue. And so just very quickly point out, not specifically for this project, but for most, yeah, you know, when something goes into the city, we do lose about $3.17 per thousand in valuation. But almost always when something rolls into a city, its valuation goes up, it's developed. And so the reality is development of these properties is usually not a negative impact on county tax revenue. But that's something we hear pretty regularly.
I remember when I first came to cover the county for the register, that discussion, I do remember being at this board table in a time when there was not development rapidly. So as it seemed to be with single-family housing, but they'd annex things, would annex property, but it just sit there still with its ag, with its ag designation, and that's not true anymore.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see. You moved.
I second.
All right. Laura seconds. Further discussion? Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 1782 passes. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Next item is discussion and consideration of technical assistance to community programs. Ann Hartman.
Morning.
Morning.
All right, so this is this board's first opportunity to weigh in on what has been a how many year program?
Since 2003. So the idea was brought to the board in 2003 to fund. Black Banking Better, we call it Technical Assistance to Community.
2003 or 2013?
Yeah, 2013. Huh? Okay. I'm sorry. 2013. I'm a little bit.
I was going to say, I remember this conversation vividly, and I wasn't here in 2003. So.
I was, so.
Yeah.
But, 2013, thank you. To allow the program idea was brought to the board to develop a funding mechanism that projects that communities under a certain size threshold could either hire a consultant for doing friendly, such as capital improvements plans, different low to moderate income surveys, LMIs, those types of necessary documents and plan approaches that allow the communities to have the necessary funding resources to get accomplished. The idea was brought to the board to actually fund that, not do the work, but fund the work to be done. So in 2013, a resolution was adopted by the board. I apologize for the small size of the font. We have a spreadsheet that shows where the funding has gone over the past 3 years. The program was initialized in 2013, then again done in 2014 with a little variation. Funding changed in that way if communities took advantage in the 2013 program, then they didn't have as much opportunity in 2014. 2015 was again, the program was funded. Last year, the board did not pursue the program. Have the discussion like they are right now. It's been asked for me by a couple different communities to bring it back to the board. And actually, this just comes back to me every year, about this time of year. So in the spreadsheet you have, I lay out three very rough options for the board to consider if you did want to continue the program. Option one is looking at a cumulative amount that each community has received for the past 3 to 4 years, assigning a very guesstimate cap of $10,000 per community. No rhyme or reason, I just picked that number of $10,000 per community. And then option one would be the difference between that $10,000 cap and what they've already received. So you look at Cambridge over the past 3-4 years has received $8,500. If we had a cap of $10,000, they would be eligible for $1,500. That's option one. Option two is similar approach. They can only receive up to that cap or $3,000, whichever is less. So in the case of a community like Roland that never participated, they would only get $3,000. Or just option three, $3,000 across the board to everyone. And different variations as well. I just, for discussion today, wanted to have some different options that you could consider if you did want to direct staff to draft a resolution and bring this back to you.
And option four is that we don't fund this program again this year, as we did last year. So philosophically, what happened here is the board in 2013 decided that the county had a role in assisting our communities with their development. We decided that the largest city, Ames, you know, they're really on their own and we're there to support wherever appropriate. Kind of the mid-sized city, Story City, Huxley, Nevada, they've got the wherewithal that if they need to do some planning, they can do some planning. In our smaller communities, when you start to talk about $2,500 to $3,000 to do some necessary planning, it's hard for them to find that. And what we've seen, I believe, is the work that was done in year one and year two, so this would have been 13 and 14, translated directly into some follow-along dollars. I think of the big community building that's starting to go up in Cambridge, I think, is a direct result of some of the work. Some of the things that have happened in Collins is directly impacted by some of the planning work that they did. But we noticed a dwindling interest in year three. It had gone from, I think we were somewhere in the $20,000 range, all said and done, that our communities were drawing on and utilizing, and that cut in half that third year. And so there was a pretty strong feeling, well, if our communities don't want this, why would we be funding it? And we made the determination, okay, we're not going to do it. Well, we received more pushback is the wrong word. We received more encouragement from some of those small communities that have really seen the benefit of this to consider continuing the program again. And that's what brings us here today.
And the pastors come at this time after the budget discussions have, the work sessions have been held, because this program would be finalized yet this fiscal year.
Right, so this year's not.
Run in the past. The project should be eligible even if they were started last July. But the funding, so the projects get done this fiscal year and the funding this fiscal year that we're in.
And what all is eligible under the way we ran the program in 13, 14, 15, what all is eligible for this?
We've done everything from engineering surveys to the city of Cambridge to the LMI surveys to capital improvement plan. It's a pretty wide spectrum of projects, but the projects have had to then beneficial and have longer term tangible impacts to the community.
So if a community needed to do an assessment of its water treatment capacity and what kind of maximums they have under our old program, they can tap into these dollars to do a study like that.
Why are we going back to July 1st, 2015, so that we still, even if they're done, we've got it in our fiscal year? We've got it. Okay.
And that's just how the program is.
Okay. I just had highlighted it, so I'm going backwards. Okay. I remember the first one. It was Brett Comingas, right? Didn't this come up because Brett wanted to do some planning for the other small communities? He had done it for Collins.
Yeah, well, it actually came up, and Brett, I think, was a key player in this, but it came up, I think, through that Story County Economic Development Group.
Okay.
With Brett. And Brett had done some of the things, but as mayor of Collins, he recognized how hard it was to find dollars to do it, and full recognition that not every mayor or city council had the ability to do it. Now, I think some of these projects were, especially that first year, Brett went out and sold his services to other communities. That hasn't been as true after that. But I think you're right. That's kind of where the conversation started.
So even though I had some trepidation at the time, I think, and expressed it about Brett selling his services that way, I heard the validity of what he was trying to do, and he produced some good results. And so seeing that just because we had some communities who didn't, you know, in 2016 we said no because it seemed like they weren't using it so much in 2015, I recognize that communities, just like we face new challenges, just like we need to update plans or I think that they still have needs to do planning. And I think also it would be nice to for us to help financially encourage that, to see that they don't get so far behind again. So I support that we do something that, you know, as far as a concept. I also think that because if we want to continue to encourage them to plan when they need to plan, I don't like a cap on it of $10,000 total and then you'll never get any more money from us. So I'm more interested in option three for me.
Just a straight where just everybody straight has access to the same amount of things, will encourage the same things, and it would be the $3,000.
Correct.
So that's Marty, what are your thoughts?
I think Laura's thoughts are a very good narrative that I would probably cleave to, in the sense that every community has its own story to tell and knows what years look like. I think the fact that we engage, we lead this board, previous board,
engages with communities to bring success to their respective communities. Their story is best told by them, but the thing is that we have the ability on a small dollar basis to have success, potentially become part of theirs. I think that we'd be well served to provide the funds.
Okay, so what I'm hearing, and I want to have a little more conversation, but what I'm hearing is, Leanne, let's move forward with you putting together the full plan for option three, which is $3,000 per community for our smaller communities, and get that final version to us to finally approve, since this board has not weighed in. You got a draft in front of us now. Go ahead with the direction we're giving you. Put together a final version for us to approve next week, and then we can get it in the community's hands, or request to consider approving next week. The other one that I'd like to see, and maybe next week is too quick for this, but we talked very briefly in some of our budget work sessions about the possibility of doing the same kind of thing for our townships and what is looming up. Now, clearly, townships have different issues than our small towns have, but it doesn't mean they don't have issues. It doesn't mean that they don't have issues they don't recognize yet. And the thing I think of when we're talking about this is the new E911 communication system that's coming down the pipe, and the amount of planning that I believe is going to have to be done township by township to make sure that we're meeting the needs of our first responders. So I'd like to suggest that we consider, separate from but similar to the program we have now, something for our townships to be able to do some planning, and that we would ask Leanne to put together a proposal for what that might look like.
I've already gone a little further down that road, pulled Chapter 359 in regards to townships and township officers, their duties and responsibilities, and I'm looking under every rock in there trying to find where we can sit there and be of assistance. They're kind of limited on what they are empowered to do per Iowa code, and I welcome that discussion.
Absolutely, and I think part of that discussion is let's make sure that we have the county attorney weigh in on whatever we're considering, is it appropriate under the structure of townships.
I'm also thinking, would the auditor's office like to weigh in as I see?
I think the auditor office already has weighed in.
Oh, with Marty? Okay, got it. Okay, thank you.
I
just
finally weighed in.
Do you
want to weigh in?
Okay.
There you go. Good morning.
Here you sit. Are you sitting in the hands up?
Yeah.
Might warm you in like that.
I think one of my, and I've voiced my comments and concerns with two out of the three of you.
Okay.
Separately.
Thank you.
The townships have very distinct roles. They aren't like the cities when it comes to a lot of things. They levy for fire and emergency services, but they levy and send those dollars directly to the fire departments that are their
fire districts.
They don't provide the services themselves, quite frankly. The cities, the fire district, whatever, fire departments do. I understand where you're coming from when it comes to the cost of these upgrades, but what I don't know that it's going to... I think you'd be better served to talk to the actual fire departments to see how you can enhance their funding for things like this. The townships are maxed up. They don't have the ability to levy any more dollars, and they basically are sending what they need to send or can send per agreements to the fire departments. That's where I'm at on that.
And I would say if you're looking more broadly, technical assistance to townships, maybe that's something that we budget in the county to provide training for things like cemetery restoration. Or we only have one township hall left in Sherman Township, but township hall restoration, things like that, or how to craft the best 2080 agreement with your fire districts, something like that, where there are experts in the state that can do that, And I know there's cemetery trains that are like all day or all week, which are expensive, which is why we haven't, we do some training at our annual township meeting, but we don't have like a huge, we don't have a huge budget for that. So if you were looking to up their skills, that's another place to look at. If there's not something in the budget of the individual townships where you can do that, you know, that's not, they're basically in charge of cemeteries, fire and emergency services, and then, you know, fence viewing when that comes up.
What is that?
That's when there's an argument between neighbors. It comes up a lot less because most people do not have livestock to the extent that they did when the laws were written.
So I think that I completely agree with everything you've said. I just come to a different conclusion. I agree that the townships don't have the ability to levy to do planning on their own. They don't have the ability to levy to do a lot of training on their own. Much like our small town, well, they have the ability maybe to levy. The reality was they couldn't. And so what we suggest to each of our small towns, we didn't go to our small towns and say, okay, we're going to provide one person who's going to write strategic plans for all of you, and we're funding it, and you can come. We said to each one of them, if you want to take advantage of this, if you want some additional training or planning or whatever it is, we'll have some funds available because we recognize that you have trouble doing that on your own. And I'm suggesting the same kind of model rather than top down or township up. Let them figure out what's in their best interest. Maybe it is combining townships and saying, yeah, we want to all get together for this training, but I think that's better coming from them rather than from us saying, this is what we're doing, and we'll see what kind of participation we get. I may be entirely wrong, but all we're asking for, or all I'm asking for today, is the ability for Leanne to go develop what a program like that might look like. Let the county attorney weigh in on whatever that development is. Does it meet the legality? And then we have the full conversation of, okay, we didn't know in 2013 if there was going to be any benefit at all to doing this to the cities. In fact, I recall some lady who has pink on today not being really in favor of us doing it in 2013.
And I told you, I'm the first to admit that.
Absolutely.
I am the first to admit that. I just see a whole different dynamics.
Absolutely.
In the town.
And all I want is the ability to have the conversation. I'm looking for buy-in from the board that we have that we develop what something might look like. And then we have the full conversation of, would it be beneficial for us to try something like this?
I think having the conversation is good and making sure that everybody's at the table. So now I'm thinking about the township, the upcoming township meeting. But that's not until what, March 10th?
No, tomorrow. Or next Wednesday.
Thank you. Okay, well, all right. Looking at the calendar, one moment at a time this week.
But that would actually give them the ability to weigh in conceptually. This is what the county has asked to look at conceptually. What do you guys think? And we just see where this thing goes. I don't know that it's an idea that at the end of the day I'm going to be all in favor of, because it is entirely different than what we do with the cities and what we're talking about doing with the cities. But I really think it's important that we at least look at it and see what, if any, benefit it could have.
Would you guys have comfort with that then? I know you've got a packed day, then next Wednesday, that was from 12. But about being able to poll the township people who come to ask, what would they prefer? That it just be organized through the auditor's office. In other words, we pay you the money, or that they would.
I
didn't mean like taking personal.
No, but I'm just saying the county could provide training without. As I see the technical assistance to community programs, you're actually like providing grant matching or funds directly to them, whereas they don't, as I understand the code, they don't really have a mechanism to do that under their responsibilities and the way they're organized. So
you're thinking they might not be able to accept the money, which is what Jessica or our county attorney would be weighing in.
Right. Okay. Well, that's great. Yeah, get the county attorney. I think it's exactly right. Ask the townships what they want. Do you want more training? Do you want us to take all this money and give it to secondary roads so you have more rock on your roads? I mean, that's probably, you know, that might be something like that.
Like you know without answering.
So the answer to, I think, your question is, do we have time to kind of poll them and see if there's interest next week at the meeting?
Yeah, there's plenty of time to do
that. I think we can find the time to do that. I mean, our agenda is...
You guys have the like introduction and overview. You can start off with it,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And then possibly also the option of that Lisa's talking about is that the people who really might need this or benefit from this would be directly providing to the fire departments.
Well, but I don't know that that's the only. I thought Lucy had a couple of great ideas. I'm not suggesting that the only thing that the townships would want to look at, if it were an option, would be 911 stuff. I just think that would be a part of it. I think some additional training is a phenomenal idea. And what that overall program would look like, and again, whether it would be county run for the township to participate in or the township run for them to determine what direction each township is going, is something we just need to talk through if we have it at all.
Not all townships have sanitaries in them, right?
Correct.
Right. Some have they're all different. Beautiful snowflakes.
And I get that. My suspicion is you see more robust township members in participation than others.
Or some like Lincoln Township, I mean this was several years ago, but they had to levy for several years to repair a marble mausoleum. They're the only one that has a marble mausoleum.
Right.
They had to go outside of state to find access to do that. So, you know, Sherman Township's the only one to have a township hall. So there are a lot of one-time issues depending on the township.
Chairman
Sanders, I have adopted, or at least I've been sharing through osmosis, the thinking out of the box approach on some of this stuff, and I don't even know if there's a box in this conversation, but on a grant writing basis, are these entities that would be somebody that, you know, because when we look, I mean, they are empowered to levy for fire service, and as we talk about the E911, would we be looking to possibly stand some of these people up on grant writing? You know, help me here, I'm looking for a little bit of direction to say that's not a good idea, or no, or well, we haven't thought about that, or yes. Is this something that they could apply on a granting basis to make a submission for dollars to that end?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
When you talk about the fire and the emergency services, like I said, they have, each township has their own 2080 agreements with their provider.
Or providers.
Yeah. There's some that are split up in different fire districts. And when it comes down, I mean, really the only thing, yes, some of them have some conversations, I'm sure, with their providers. But in all reality, those fire departments are looking for the cash. They aren't looking for input a lot of times, I don't think, from your township officials.
Tina, Fundee doesn't want input from the funder? That's shocking.
And I don't mean it negatively. I'm just saying that's what they want from them is whatever they can levy. So that they can provide those services. And they are the ones, the fire departments are the ones that are going to be worried about the radio upgrades and the emergency, you know, manage, or the emergency services portion of it. They're saying to the townships, here, you can levy this much money, give it to us.
So from back to the original kind of thought process here is we'd be asking Leanne to do some research, maybe talking to our county attorney to get that information, getting input from the auditor's office so that next Wednesday morning, a week from, all right, that we might be able to put something in front of the township officials with us having done nothing. We'd just be doing a poll, pretty much.
I think it is reasonable. So Leanne already has a conceptual draft of what it might look like. It's not real fleshed out yet, but a conceptual draft. We have had initial feedback from the county attorney way back when this idea was first conceived. I know I spoke with Jessica. I think you spoke with Jessica. But I think we need to get some more weigh in. But I think presenting the township trustees who attend some kind of draft concept of what are your initial thoughts if the county had something like this, and then we dig in. So that would mean we would come back and weigh in on February 21st. Right, it would be the date we come back in. So I think we've got pretty clear direction on assistance to our smaller communities. That's option three, get it developed, get it back to us maybe next week so that we can get it in their hands and ready to go. Lisa, thank you. I agree that our townships are beautiful little snowflakes.
They are beautiful little snowflakes.
I just meant that they're all different.
Exactly. I agree with that.
Have some different needs. Yeah.
But then the second, so I think we've got clear direction, Leanne, for you on municipalities, the smaller municipalities. We don't yet have clear direction on the townships, and I think what I'm asking for support in is direction for Leanne to dig into townships a little further and try to create a broad-based concept that we can present, a broad-based legal concept.
Taking account of our code.
Absolutely, that we can present to the townships for comment before we take any action on it.
I could support that.
Well, I don't know that we need a motion as direction for Leanne. If you guys support it, support it.
You've got a discussion and consideration here.
Yeah, but I'm not asking us to consider technical assistance for the township. I'm asking for something to be developed. We can do it in a motion if you want.
Well, I'm just going by what I see on the agenda.
Okay. Yeah. First of all, I'd like to make a motion to direct Leanne to do further research, search, and come up with the concept of the plan, at least, and maybe some possible questions that we might want to pose at the township meeting. Okay. And then I'll have a second motion.
Yeah, let's start there.
Yes.
All right, discussion on that. Okay. Olson.
Aye.
Chi.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. You're good there. You got a second motion.
Yeah, the second one, I would move that we table, because of the consideration part on the agenda. But if we want to table this part, don't we need to table it?
Yeah.
Or defer it?
Consideration doesn't mean that we have to take action on something.
That's true. Oh, okay. Well, in that case, never mind. Yeah.
So we're going to move to action. So we've actually dealt with that.
Yep. But now I want to take a step back on the agenda because I moved us ahead. If this is the way we're going to work, I moved us ahead inappropriately on the communities. We need a motion on that to direct Leanne if we're going to do motions for direction.
I move that Leanne Harder move ahead with putting together the Community Technical Assistance Program, actually using the option three.
Yes.
Okay, using option three.
Second.
We have motion and second. Any other discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Leanne, clear enough?
Yeah. Okay. Just to share with everyone. We do fully intend to get the firm out of Illinois to come this spring to do cemetery training for township trustees.
And a full day?
Yeah, it would be half day classroom, half day in field. That was something the previous board had approved funding of, and I've been working with individuals. Just last fall, the weather and harvest and his schedule, they never meshed, so hopefully this spring we can get that to work.
All right, next on the agenda is the one and only Joe Quaker. But we're going to take a 2-minute recess because Joe works.
I get caught in. We got yellow light. We went from red to yellow.
Okay.
They are adopting it. What they would like to do with their housing, as they see it coming to life with their tuition, they would like to know what the capacity is on their living system right now. So they asked us if we would be a contributor to seeing that study. So
they
don't know. Yeah. Not that old. Well, just
say we
do small towns all the time.
Okay.
So what we're thinking about is probably there's one guy because we also want to find out
that
They love you. You're here next Wednesday, right?
I know, actually.
Good to meet you.
I'm out here. Yeah. I'm going to see you awesome.
John, I see you're zipping up your coat. Are you leaving us? Okay.
Thanks for having me back. Joe Quaker, Story County Conservation, the IRVM department. It was November 8th since I was here last for an official update.
Your hair grown.
Yeah, well, Mr. Cheney and I get our haircut at the same place. And
it's two different barbers. There's no way it's the same barber.
The last time I was in was in August, and she's like, did you forget about me? So I had to go to a hairball concert. I didn't want to cut it before that was over. I was going to talk a little bit about the IRVM program and the state level, but I think I'll wait on that one. A lot of heavy stuff. I learned a lot of stuff today sitting in here. You know, they're trying to get some momentum going on re-upping. It's, you know, it kind of goes in a like this. When the program started in the 80s, a lot of PR out there, and then things, you know, when it's going good, you know, you don't go to church when things are good. Someone told me once sometimes. And so, you know, the roadside programs are hanging in there, but there's some questionnaires out, some things they send out to all the counties and the county engineers to talk about. It's interesting. I'd like to go through that with you at some point, but not today. I'm just going to kind of catch up a little bit. November, we did some planting. We got the hydro seeder out. We pretty much caught up with Todd and the crew, the road department crew. There is some bare soil out there, but as you know, I report, I try to get everything covered in mulch that I can before it goes to bed in winter, so we don't get much erosion. That's number one for us. That seed will wait and grow. Some of it did grow in November. Had a good year for growing plants. It'll pop in the spring if, you know, we had a little moisture, but nothing too significant. 17 sites, about 5 acres. We did a little burning in November, but not much. And then in December, we started again. And we wrapped up some planting. And the day of our holiday dinner was our second day of cutting brush and trees, mainly trees, out of our drainage districts. And we had cut a tire on that, on our loader, the 5115M. We have a tractor that we bought about 3 years ago, and we have it specialized with wide, lengthen out the tires. We have a ballast box in the back and a big loader grapple. It works great. But when we were mowing roadsides in August, we cut a tire on a culvert. That's why we don't mow roadsides very often, because they're dangerous places. We bought a used tire to save money. Well, that thing leaked air, and we couldn't get that going. The tires are $800. We had to order a tire from Germany to get this thing fixed, and it took a while. So we were down after we finally got started, and it was in Milford 41, north of the county home a couple miles, where the Chumlins farm up north.
and we got that done. A bunch of trees out of that little open ditch. Again, we left the native shrubs. We didn't go after those. And these were dead trees, dead cottonwoods that were causing problems with the flow. We wrapped that up just as the rain came. Okay, we had a lot of warm weather and some rain. The creeks went up. We couldn't work in it until last week. And we've been down in Milford 5. And I think, Mr. Chitty, I left a message to invite you and down. And we're still down there. They're actually, I just called them today. They're burning two big brush piles. And we do that by getting some old silver. No, not really, but just some straw from...
cross that one off the list.
Take it back. Some straw. And Megan, you know, she watches us closely. We don't want, we're Story County Conservation. We don't want to use a lot of Boy Scout juice that we don't need to start this stuff up. You know, there's all kinds of ways to burn brush piles. I've seen folks put diesel fuel in the loader and dump it on. We're not that way. We just put a bale of straw in the middle. They give it a little Kingsford, light the match, and they're burning those up. We do try to promote the local folks. If they want any trees out of there, any wood to burn, to come and get that. The problem with that is you have to go 3/4 of a mile back into the section on plowed ground, and it's kind of rough on your kidneys to get it back. So we are done. 6/10 is a north-south road. Kind of comes through Van Wall, goes straight south, crosses 30, hits the Shipley Blacktop, okay? We have everything cleared from that 6/10 west. So we're starting on the east mile. We have 1 mile left. We want to wrap that up. Scott Wall's giving us direction. Evidently, there's a little more work to do on Grant 5 coming up. Cheers. And we will try to get
$4 million.
Yeah, we'll try to get our stuff done. This will be, and I'm not whining, I do at times, but a good opportunity for driving around to go down there and see what we're up against. And as the soil and water folks were here, this is where there's farming right up to the side of this open ditch. And I don't blame them for killing. Heavy chisel up the headlands. It's really hard to drive on, except when it's softer out, we can make a track. Otherwise, it's tough to get to these areas and do our work. And we're just making progress in that. With the changing of the guard, I just talked to Dana from the NRCS out here. There is funding coming through, but there is, at this point, no new sign-ups. You can come in and sign up, but you're not. They don't know if you're going to be accepted for a while. And so all the paperwork's done. Changing of the guard. Where's Washington? Yeah, that way. So that's that, okay? Now, I didn't expect for people to talk about equipment today, but I brought something in. First of all, we've been doing a lot of maintenance. Well, I better state the microphone. I sat down and went through my equipment that I've had, and I've been around since 89. I kind of like to tinker on stuff a little less now than I did, but the average age of my equipment from a weed eater down to a new pickup truck is 17 years old. We can keep that stuff running. I heard of people today, you know, a lot of money costs in maintenance, but these are simple things, and I can keep up on it for the most part.
And you've actually gotten newer over the last 3 or 4 years than you were.
Absolutely. No complaints there. You know, we're making headway. I put down on a list everything that needs fixed that's this big and highlighted in yellow, what has to happen before pretty much April 1st. And that could be anything from a simple oil change to running 12 volts back. You know, we have big Honda engines that don't start very well with a pull rope. It's nice to have a key. And to have a battery, external battery is a little tough. So you try to run it, you know, just things that are happening. We really caught up on this when the weather hit and the water was deep. Now we're out on the roadsides, but, I mean, in the drainage ditch is cutting brush. But this will happen as much as it can. One thing we are doing, and we've alluded to that with the soil and water, is we're doing a lot of maintenance on our seeding equipment, okay? We have 4 drills that we rent out. We have a couple. Mr. Chi, do you know what these are? camp from here, see what it looks like.
You can pass them down at show and tell times.
Those are just the scrapers to our drills.
They're not dirty. You won't get grease on your cool clothes.
They just wear out. So if you have 16 disc openers, it's 32, you know, times four drills. So that's the money that we're talking about that maybe the soil and water people can help us out with, parts, things like that. I'm going to get up a minute and show you this thing because I'm taking it in.
Here, just speak into that.
If I could carry it up here, that killed me. This is the bottom end of our Lycon cedar. One of the best cedars made from Germany. We rent this out. It was bought in 2003 with no nonprofit money, all our county budget. Can you see what's broken on that?
I'm looking at it. It's pointing right at me.
Yeah, that is a huge break. This assembly is no good. You can't weld pot metal. So I wanted the board to know, and maybe some of the political junkies that listen to these tapes, that these are expenditures that come up, and you can't really bank on this. I wouldn't have guessed that this big piece of metal would have broken on such, you know, on such a good unit.
So can you point closer to where the break is, like right at it, like
right here?
Oh, thank you. Okay,
yeah.
Yeah, non-painted surface.
That was flip around and connect to that.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
That's $1,000. So we'll do what we can. But I just thought I'd bring it in. Mike wanted to see it anyway, so we got to see it. All right. So it's things like that we've been working on. Clearing drainage ditches, burning brush piles, and equipment maintenance. Next, real quick, I wanted to hit safety. Wayne would want me to do so too, because now Laura's on the board. Okay? Mm-hmm. So if you ever see me hydro seed, it's 13.2 feet to the top of that thing. If I'm in the truck, I'm yelling back at that person, it's 87 decibels at idle. So we have earplugs in. What we did is we wrote a grant. You guys had to pay 20% of that. I don't really know the amount at this point, but it was, you know, I think it was $1,000 total. So these are kind of neat. I don't want to mess my really cool hair up, but it goes like this. You can talk into it. Come in, Goose. Maverick.
I got it.
OSHA approved. Put a battery in it. I can talk to that person. They'll have another set on top. Just like what the airports use.
What's the range on those?
3 miles.
We need 13.2 feet.
3 miles.
Overkill.
After 5 wild children, I get to yell pretty good, but I'm just getting tired of it. And so it's just nice to be able to talk and say, all right, I'm going to start now. Go ahead and turn on the sprayer. Thank you, Joe. Instead of, turn on the sprayer. Anyway, safety item, OSHA approved. Quiet. Just thought I'd let you know what our hard-earned taxpayer dollars go.
And how much did you say that cost again?
Well, I really don't want to say 100%, but I'm thinking each one was $600. Okay. So about $1,200, 80% cost share through a grant. So maybe $200 of our tax asking for this.
Good.
You wrapped right along on this.
I can't hear because of the hydro cedar. What?
Need to get you a headphone so you can talk to him.
Come in, Marty. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can, Joe. Do you write a lot of grants?
I write about 3 or 4 a year.
Okay. Congratulations, y'all. Lucky. Grant writing is almost as much of a mystical event as it is a science.
You get good at it, and it's kind of just who you know. Yeah, that's it. I'll just keep it short.
Yeah, so a couple things.
One,
We are not looking for Soil and Water Conservation District to be a funder for IRBM. We're looking for IRBM to work with Soil and Water Conservation to help them with some of the things they're trying to get done. So I thought I heard something where you were hopeful that they were going to help fund something. So what we committed to, they asked us to buy them a cedar. And we said, no, we don't want to buy you a cedar. They said, we'll buy a cedar and we'll keep it at a farmer's house and that farmer will maintain it. And we said, no, we don't want to do that. We believe we have equipment available for IRBM. We want IRBM to work with you. And if IRBM needs more equipment, we'll buy it for IRBM and have it available to Soil and Water. So that's one thing. Second thing is, when you have equipment, unforeseen breakage in an important piece of equipment, it is up to this board to figure out how to pay for getting it fixed. Okay? That's beyond. We try to put money in the budget to fix foreseeable things. We try to have enough in there that we do things. But when you have a big break, when you have something that is $1,000 that there's no way we could foresee, bring it to us and we'll figure it out.
That's why it's here.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right.
That was my point, and I do know that I'm pretty sure with the Conservation Board, anything over $1,000 does need the director's approval.
And you've got to follow the right chain of command. That would have to go through Mike. But what we don't get to is we don't get to, that piece of equipment doesn't work because we don't have the money to fix it. We dig in and we figure out how to get things done.
I'm thinking that. I did go price that one out. It's $3,700 new. I think we put $1,000 in it. We're going to have a good piece of equipment. And, to wrap up with the Soil and Water, we've had a lot of commentary between us in the back about them funding our helping fund for new equipment coming down, or actually parts to fix it.
Sure.
So that's kind of where I was going with it.
Absolutely, and I want that relationship to get even closer. Appreciate the work you do with them. Really appreciate the work they do. We need to get that relationship closer. We need to see what you're saying. It might be 10,000 acres that we've got in cover crops right now. We need to do our part to try to grow that as much as possible and make it as easy to grow that.
Because he has the cedars that put the waterways in. They're not going to be doing your bank step backs, but there are places that clearly need that. Those need to run down and stop being till soil. That's what you know where they are. I know where some of them are, too.
Right.
We all pay for it in the end when it dumps into us. And we have a lot of the seeding for the is done aerial, for aerial seeding for the cover crop because they're so big acres. But our equipment does a lot of other stuff too.
Okay. Joe, we left you with burning last year. At least I did. Every time you come here, you can tell me about burning.
So we did a couple acres, one roadside this spring or this fall. And one of the things on my sheet is to get our burn rig together. It's sitting in our shop, which I invite everyone out to come see someday. Unannounced even. I'll turn the stereo down a little bit.
He'll wake up. He'll be under a piece of equipment.
We do have chairs out there that are comfortable at times.
You ask, and I'm right across the road.
Right. And so, we expect that. And it does look like a bone pile at times out there, because that's kind of how I am. But I hate to throw stuff away that I can make something else into. Burning, it is on the agenda, number one. So we need to wrap these burn piles up so we're not stuck in April burning all these burn brush piles,
right,
so we can hit roadside burning and get up to that, 25 to 30 acre average that we did all the way up until probably 2013. So that's kind of where we're at for that.
Has anybody contacted you as far as signing up? Because you're going to see one of the sure things is Robbins, Market Madness, and Farmers Operating Ditches. Has anybody contacted you about any control plans that your department would be doing?
Not yet. That will be coming up. And I did actually, knowing that this question was coming up, look at my press releases that I put out back in the day. And there is a burning one in there. I need to kind of revamp it, make sure it's all politically correct and get that out. But that will
work
be
quickly and get that out.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, all right.
We're really trying hard, Leanne and I, right now, to come up with a game plan to make sure that we've got some good coordinated communications. So please. Okay.
Will do. In my other channels, you go with Jolene and Jerry and Erica from the conservation staff that do some of that as far as the narrative and making sure I hit spell check.
But I can see that then rerouting down here so it goes to the right spot.
Perfect. Thank you.
Success is my middle name.
Thank you.
I always look forward to it.
Looking forward to the next time.
Yeah. All right, Margaret, you're up next. Congratulations on following Joe.
I don't quite get the introduction like Joe.
Well, he brings his story.
There you go.
If you bring props,
Thank you.
Yeah, no props. Cindy recommended that I bring
some of her props. Okay.
Okay.
Just again. Okay. So good morning, Environmental Health. Afternoon, Environmental Health, Margaret James. I just wanted to say that it's all connected. It really is, because ACPC, two of my boys went through ACPC, after school program, you know, and that enables you, mom, to go to work, right? Yeah, or dad, whatever. And then also the soil and water folks were here today, too, and they, you know, chipped in $10,000 for our septic replacement program around Hickory Grove Lake. So, way cool how it's all connected. Very cool. So, with that, I'll get started. So, septic systems. Apparently, they didn't listen to Punxsutawney Phil. The phone is starting to ring. People are submitting applications for septics. And they think that I can come out and do it this week. So I actually did one earlier this week, but he brought his backhoe, so we're okay with that. So very little actual field work going on right now, but that will change shortly. So for wells, we've done 21 permits so far this fiscal year, 14 geothermal. We've done 21 plugings, 4 cisterns, for rehabs, water samples, 91, and including that is 32 time of transfer inspections, the well inspections. And most of these items are subsidized with our grants to counties. So far, we've spent $26,000 this year, or $23,000 this year. We have about $3,000 left, and we qualify to receive another $9,000. That'll be available this February.
Will we have any trouble getting through that?
I don't think so. Something that we didn't do earlier, because we were kind of running out of money, is do a little more of the arsenic testing. I went to a state program, and Story County testing events are low compared to others because we've been spending it on plugging, which I think is more important at this point. But they want to see some statistics to know where we're going with. So we'll do a little bit more with that come February. Pools, tattoo, and tanning. 45 pool facilities. We did, actually we're up to, I think we've done 6 inspections now. 7 tattoo facilities. We wait for a little longer, a little bit warmer weather. We do the inspections with that. And then we're starting to do our tanning facilities. We've had 3 inspections now with that. And
you're
then
speaking Morris's language anytime you put a picture like that up. So.
Yeah, isn't that cute? I love that. Okay, and then enforcement. So what we've focused on recently is sending out reminders to folks that need maintenance contracts. It's required by the state and county. If you've got an oddball system like that, you need to have somebody come in and maintain it around the calendar, okay? And testing it also. That's a list of systems that go in. The main ones we see now are COCOs and Advantex. COCOs replace peat moss because it's cheaper, takes up less room, and works a little better. Multiflows are on the way, are totally on the way out. We don't even allow them anymore. A lot of problems with them. And then Advantex, a little higher dollar, but addresses the nitrate problem some, does require power. And we've got about 65 of these units, actually. So for training, Kathy and I both attended the IOWWA conference, which is septic system stuff, and the DNR annual meeting where they kind of, you know, bring us up to date on things that they're working on, money issues that they're facing, and then they have some guest speakers. Things that don't quite fit into the other categories that we're working on. Matt has gotten three consecutive good tests for bacteria and chlorine levels. So it's working out okay. It's an unpleasant visit for him every time. The trailer is it's just a...
Are you pulling from the same trailer then?
We are, okay. Yes. On 12, that's okay.
All
yeah.
Right.
It's hard to find folks at home or willing to let us in
sure.
to those situations. Sure. Okay. Yeah. A lot of pets in that one individual unit. That's causing some issues.
Okay.
Let's see. I'll talk about the allegiance burning in a minute here. The church in Nevada, the Catholic Church, they are waiting on the specialists to come in and do the asbestos removal. They did find some, a little bit around the chimney. And then in the next couple of weeks, that building will be removed. We received complaints on that earlier. So I've been working with the church, and they've been very agreeable. They found the funds, and they're going to go forward with it. I've been involved with Jerry Moore planning on the Cameron Estates reviews, Iron Bridge reviews, all the things that come up. Ames Golf and Country Club mound, I'm working with the pumper. They've got to go in and pump, you know, the mound. Bell Home's destroyed. And so the country club has to have everything pumped and brought down to Des Moines. And it's very expensive. What's happening right now is DNR is responsible for issuing the permit for the septic system for the country club because of the size. And it's just a lot slower process there than with the county. So they're working on that. Anything that sits in a holding tank cannot be land applied. It has to be brought down. City of Ames is so expensive, it's cheaper to haul the stuff down to Des Moines.
Okay.
Yeah. We, with planning development, we had the city of Nevada come in and talk a little bit about their plans for their new treatment plant. And I put that bee in their bonnet that we really need a place that's affordable for the fats, oils, and greases to be dropped off, because just at this last DNR meeting, they announced that they will not allow land application of fats, oils, and grease fog. So again, people have been stockpiling it. You know, you see these guys going around midnight going and doing the grease traps at their restaurants. They bring it back to their shop, store it in a big tank, and then take a full load down to Des Moines when they get around to it. Just not doable in Ames. This is the burning at Crestview. So the problem here is he's burning trailer parts, and very good chance of asbestos being in those. So I stopped him, and he said he's just burning locally grown brush. And so it's like, no, I just took a picture, and it was definitely, parts that he wasn't supposed to be burning. So he stopped that, I think. I mean, it's pretty hard to keep track of that. There's a few people that will call on occasion and complain.
What, can we issue a citation?
Well, I went out and stopped him, and he did. So the citation would come after that. If that's the direction you want me to take next, I can. That's kind of a Board of Health thing, I guess.
It's a Board of Health thing.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Marty, we'll discuss that this afternoon. I think he stopped doing it.
So our role in this is, are our ordinances sufficient to allow you and the Board of Health to do what you need to do? That's the Board of Supervisors' role.
Yes.
Right? And so if you start seeing holes where our ordinances aren't sufficient to allow you to take care of this thing, that's where we really will need to weigh in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And I think that they are, if I need to be a little more hardball on this, I can, so that...
Well, that's between you and Board of Health,
yes,
how
it
you
is.
Operate and dealing with it. We've got to have the full conversation.
Yeah.
Do that this afternoon at 2 o'clock right back here if anybody was interested.
That's right. And that's all I have. Thank you for listening.
Questions for Margaret?
Margaret, is there anything going through the legislature down in Vermont that would be of interest to you or give direction on anything that should be done going forward?
Nothing huge right now. The restaurant fees again. That's, you know, they're talking about that again. We do not do restaurant inspections, so not really. I mean, I'm certainly in favor of it, but nothing that.
Okay, a whole draft of laws come July 1. I didn't know if anything was circulating. It might have something to do with the annual or the
Questions?
Right.
Good. Thanks, Margaret.
Thank you.
No other reports. Public forum number 2, opportunity for members to comment on items not on today's agenda. We're not taking any action because we can't, but we might in the future. Anybody wishing to address us on anything? Okay, seeing no one, we'll move on to liaison assignments, meeting updates. Marty.
We had a rec center meeting last Wednesday that kind of did a sea change in the fact that as the committee did costing analysis, that they found that they were running up against probably insurmountable financial number. And so the school started a conversation that as they were looking at future near-term growth, that they would be doing a probably a site acquisition, and that it is the conviction of the school here in town that they would not build solely without gym space. So that we're seeing a retooling of the approach that will probably move it from the campus of the hospital, but yet still partnerships that have been formed up to this point are likely to continue, and the host community will probably be in the way of the school district. That's it. More to come.
Okay.
Well, last night, Mike Cox and I and Craig Myers from the Conservation Board had a very well-received meeting with the Cobo City Council in regards to seeing if we could get an opportunity to tie in our septic from Hickory Grove to the lagoon system through the city of Colo. We came to a tentative agreement that there would be an engineering analysis of the lagoon capacity of Colo, that we would be a contributing member of that cost to find out their existing capacity and give them a little bit of a path going forward to their likely housing project and the hoped addition of the septic component from the Hickory Grove. That said, they like Mike's narrative to the fact that he was expressly asked what would that do for them as a city. Mike told a pretty good story as far as it would give additional camping opportunities because you would have further campsites, shelter houses, and if not, and I quote Mike on this, he said there's the possibility or if not the likelihood of the cabins being placed in and around the 100-acre facility when they're not there today. By Colo acquiescing to this and earning a partnership with Story County, what would be our flagship would be made greater. They have great comfort in Mike sharing the dredging component and the possible reconfiguration of the lake itself. They have great interest in that. That's something that they realize that I think they've come to grips with, to see that whatever is improved at Hickory Grove has a direct benefit to their community, and I think you can find a partnership coming out of that. I also have a DuPont cap tonight, which is a Citizens Action
Advisory
at 6, and we hope by what you see happening out there with their additional workforce on site and their staging of mails that they might be making the official announcement that that plan is going on. We will say.
It would be nice if we could dispose of some bells as the plan is intended rather than just
using a swiping bells here earlier than
Quaker said he used. Laura.
Okay, well, once again, I apologize for not being here last week, but nobody wanted me here last week.
So true.
So let's see. Moving forward, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to thank you to all of you who went through that meeting last week, and I'll let you know I did listen to the audio every single bit of it. I, however, was able to take breaks. Okay. So this week, let's see, we're going to the Slater Historical Society. At least I am tomorrow. All of us have been invited. It's a strictly to view their new exhibit and they have their annual meeting. We have a very, very limited role, so it was not posted. Okay. Then Thursday morning, Marty and I are touring mainstream living facilities, and we actually, the county doesn't fund facilities, fund any services directly anymore. Everything goes through the regional mental health. So I didn't think about, consider posting that as an open meeting. It's not. It's a tour of a facility. Okay. Thursday at noon, I'm speaking at the Ames Noon Lions Club. They asked the new kid to come. I spoke at to them, I guess, a decade ago when I first left the register. So that was, or more. So it's kind of like an old home. We'll have to see who's still there. And then that night, all three of us have been invited to the Farm Bureau of Story County for a dinner and discussion of county policy. And that one is going to be posted on the website as soon as we hear back from Farm Bureau. Thank you, Leanne. She came up with a community meeting agenda, and I just fired it off last night to ask them to take a look to see if we had worded everything correctly from their standpoint. So related to all of that, there are changes underway for us in the agenda center. So Leanne and I spent about an hour yesterday moving some of the links around. It's come to our attention, or at least my attention, that if you select to follow the Board of Supervisors because you want to get notice when they get that when there's a meeting, you only get the Tuesday meetings and anything that would be a special call to take action. You have to go in separately to sign up for the work sessions. You have to go in separately to sign up for the community quadrant meetings, or now community and informational or miscellaneous meetings like the Farm Bureau, et cetera. So Leanne's already moved that around, and I'll be talking to IT to find out who can get clearance to help Leanne post those. I've talked to the auditor's office, and that's not something that the auditor feels that Shelley can take on right now. So, okay, that pretty well takes care of my week. So I'm going to leave it there.
Outstanding. Had a good meeting with the Gilbert City Council last night. Just an update on our progress on Grant, Gretton, Hyde, 530th, which is all one street. And I think complete acknowledgement from the City of Gilbert that they have a portion, a role to play financially in all of that. So that was really, really positive. Announcements, Marty. Loris, you take
already
care of all that already?
Already did.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take a motion to adjourn. So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.